Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to BWI Live. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. We're totally live today. Totally. It's May. There's some scheduling conflicts, and these guys need to get a couple of things done, so we're recording this a little bit early, and we're bringing it to you. We're having a good show today, so stick around. We're going to be talking about a lot of Penn State recruiting stuff, and we're going to have some fun at the end of the show, and get back in the time machine, rewind, and look at Penn State's draft picks as they were as recruits. At Penn State. So the good news about that is I won't be talking anything about these guys. It's going to be Sean Fitz and Ryan Snyder talking about the Penn State drafted players, which will be a refreshing change from what we've done on this show the previous 4 days. So welcome, guys. Fitz, how you doing today?
Doing great. Yeah, we had to put Ryan on tape delay because of his language. So it's sorry about that, people. But no, I'm heading out on Thursday. Just the Orioles Yankees game is in the afternoon. My 7-year-old has adopted my Yankee fandom and he wants to go to a game, and it's kind of perfect. It's going to be about 95 degrees or something like that on Thursday down in Baltimore. But no, I'll be the first trip to Camden Yards, which is actually the park that I grew up watching games at. So really excited for that. And I missed last week, so I wanted to record in advance. So it's my fault why we're not live. I was actually just looking at the comment section for any potential questions, but then I'm not live here. So yeah, we're off to a great start.
Ryan has recovered, I think, from Luke Combs. How was the show?
Oh, it was excellent. I remember everything about it. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, guys. It wasn't that gone. We had a good time. Thanks, Sean. Sean stopped out at the tailgate, had some good friends out there. Weather wasn't the greatest, right? But I think everybody was happy the ring went away then. And yeah, no, great weekend in State College. And yeah, I remember it perfectly. It's great.
I was at Happy Valley Jam the first time they did a concert at Beaver Stadium, and I thought it was great. But I'm just curious, like, what was the environment like for a full-on country music superstar? How was the stadium as a viewing experience?
I just said I don't remember. I'm just kidding.
But you can remember the vibes.
It was. I did not think they would actually get like 80,000 people in there, and they did. The only reason I was saying that was because if you looked at like StubHub and those, and, you know, secondary sites, there's a lot of cheaper tickets up for grabs, and that kind of told me it'd be like a big game in State College, but not a whiteout, you know, where those corners are kind of spotty, and mm-hmm. you can go up there with your friends if you're looking to find people to sit with. But no, it was absolutely packed. So I'd be very curious to see moving forward how they're able to do that, because they're going to absolutely want to keep that going. But
yeah,
we were having a discussion the other day, like, there's only, I think, 10 artists in the world, maybe if that, who could really actually sell out a stadium of that size. And obviously Luke Combs is one of them. But
yeah,
I mean, country wise, maybe Morgan Wallen. I can't think of too many other people. Penn State likes to seem to go with the country theme, is why I bring that up.
I think a little safer pulling in people from the area, from Harrisburg yes. to Pittsburgh, more so than pulling in people that can go see Taylor Swift at Wells Fargo or something like that.
Taylor Swift would sell that out. I'm not worried about that. But
probably the one, I probably mentioned the one that I shouldn't have, but yeah, kind of that idea of you can go see some of these people, you know, at easier venues in New York, Philadelphia, or DC, as opposed to making the trek to Happy Valley.
How about that State College weather, man? Like, twice in April, we got awful Saturdays followed by magnificent Sundays, and both times the event was on the Saturday. So yeah, yeah, it's just Russian roulette with this weather up here, man.
Yeah, and that has been.
Just kidding.
That's been something they've been dealing with through spring practice and transitioning back into recruiting. Some of the things that we talk about, all of those things, talking about how you use Beaver Stadium, guys, it all fits into the Penn State lexicon of these are the issues that. All right, I'm not going to try so hard. We got an official visit that's been announced for Penn State football. And Ryan, tell us a little bit more about Corey Sims.
Yeah, there's been a bunch that have actually come out over the last couple of days. We'll stick with Corey, a couple others behind the paywall right now. But for those who subscribe, there's actually been quite a bit of movement, I would say, over the last 3-4 days, which isn't a total surprise because we also have seen quite a few commitments over the last, 3 weeks or so. Go ahead.
Before we get to that, hit him with a promo deal. Let them know how they can join Blue White Illustrated.
Oh, you mean like 2 months for a dollar because you're watching on YouTube for T. Frank's special deal that he's been promoting so much, so often. But yeah, guys, I mean, June's coming up. So you got fall and all the previews for what's coming up in June. And then obviously, since you get that extra month, you get all the good stuff in June. How did I do, T. Frank? Did I do good with that?
You nailed it. That's why I wanted to pass the ball. I wanted somebody else to hit the layup on that one. Okay, let's get to Corey Sims. What do you know? What do you think about this particular situation?
Yeah, quality wide receiver out of St. Louis, Missouri. Area is not really an area that Penn State recruits often, I would say, but they got him on campus in January, and it kind of went quiet for a little while. He hadn't been talking about Penn State as much, and I don't know if he's really been asked about it, to be fair, but we caught up with him this past week, and he made it very clear that nothing has really changed with Penn State at all. He took that visit in January and set the bar high, and Penn State was always going to be a school that got one of his official visits. So that's a positive there. This is another 6'3 player that kind of fits the Lyric Samuel, Quincy Porter, taller, lengthier guys that they're trying to try and find some. They don't need all of them. Don't get me wrong. There's some shorter guys that they're going to be after hard too, but he does fit that mold of, adding length to the room. So let's see where things go. He's got, USC, Nebraska, and Missouri lined up as his other official visits. And he said there's a couple other schools trying to squeeze in either midweeks or May visits, but it feels like those four, are firmly the four right now to keep an eye on. And Penn State seems to have as good of a chance as anybody. Missouri's the popular pick because of proximity to home and all that, but wouldn't it be kind of funny if Penn State pulls in one of Missouri's top players after Missouri pulled in one of Pennsylvania's top players?
I was just about to go to you with that. It seems like every year there is a different challenger for Penn State with some of their important recruits. Sometimes it's Notre Dame, sometimes it's Florida, sometimes it's South Carolina or North Carolina, and this year it seems to be Missouri. So, how do you view this particular battle between the two schools here?
I did not have the Tigers on my bingo card heading into the cycle. That's not usually one that you overlap with. There was a time long ago when they had a coach that had some connections to Northeast Pennsylvania, but it really wasn't a situation that you really thought about too often with Penn State. So, but in the age of NIL, this is a program that seems emboldened by the resources that they have, and they're going out and they're battling not just Penn State, but again, they beat Georgia for Matt Zollers as well. Like they're going up to head to head with some of the best and coming away with it. I think it's interesting here. You look at how Penn State has done receiver recruiting, and that's obviously been the hot topic, and it's going to be the hot topic until they have six in the boat, and that's what Penn State fans want.
Right.
One of them
top 150 at least.
Maybe. I mean, you got to catch Ohio State somehow. But you've got these guys closer to home. Lex Cyrus, Jeff Exenor, Matthew Otten's a guy that we've talked a bunch about. And then you kind of have a different bin for national guys. You've got guys coming in. Corey Sims is one of those guys that's coming in. Andrew Marsh from Texas going to come in. Philip Bell from California has already been to campus. So there's a bunch of guys that are sort of in a separate, it's kind of like the high school and JUCO type thing. You kind of put them in separate containers, even though they all filter into the same eventual room. So I'll be very interested to see how that goes, because you feel pretty good about Lex Cyrus. You feel pretty good about Jeff Exenor, and Otten's been on campus a couple of times. So you've got them in this pile, but in this other pile, you have a chance to make a splash nationally. I mean, does that happen? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that has to go on. There's a lot of different factors, especially when you're that far from home. I mean, we're talking Texas, California. Taz Williams Jr. is from Pittsburgh, but he's in Texas. I mean, so yeah. There's a lot of different guys. Florida, of course, is always a state where they look for receivers as well. So it's kind of interesting to watch the dynamics of this, and it's not playing out with commitments right away, even though they got Lyric Samuel. But over the summer, they're going to have some decisions to make, and how's that all going to play out? Usually what happens with Penn State is they set out to take, say, three receivers, and then all of a sudden they get in and they've got guys that are legitimate athletes at this level. They did it a couple of cycles ago with guys like Tyler Johnson and Anthony Ivey, that cycle there, and it hasn't panned out quite yet, but they find themselves in a situation where they're like, we're not going to turn down this athlete. They're not going to turn down Les Cyrus running up 10-4 or whatever he ran last year. So it's a very interesting dynamic when you take the local-ish, the regional receivers and the national receivers, put them together and sort of put them in a ring and see what comes out on top.
So, of course, we're going to be following all of that receiver recruiting throughout the next couple of months and see how all this comes out in the wash. I'll handle this one, guys. Don't worry. Today's show sponsor is My Perfect Franchise. If you've watched this show, you've listened to this podcast, you know about My Perfect Franchise. So, for those that are new and maybe people who are joining us for the first time, My Perfect Franchise is Andy Ludicky. He's a franchise consultant who helps find the best business for you to manage and buy into. This is for people who have the means and talent to run their own business. If you want to leave the corporate rat race, you have business experience, maybe you want a side hustle, you're trying to invest in yourself and make a legacy or build wealth, he can help you do that. Because he's done all of this. He left corporate America and started managing his own franchises and now manages his own life because of it. And he wants to help you on that road as well. So give him a call, 404-973-9901. That's 404-973-9901. Andy at myperfectfranchise.net. Last time we were talking to him, he was telling us about how he has had to do the hard stuff. He's learned the good and the bad of how to manage a franchise, including having to make some hard decisions. So if you have all of those skills, give him a call. Andy at myperfectfranchise.net, 404-973-9901.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm going to put this under the news category, but really we're into the season where you guys are writing things that are prepping everybody for official visits coming up in the next couple of weeks and generally for this class. Now that we've gotten into a little bit more information, maybe the board's a little bit clearer, but I forget who it was wrote the Penn State most wanted on offense. Fitz, was that you?
Yeah, that was me. And hopefully by the time we see this on Thursday, the other portion will be up on defense. Fingers crossed on that one. But it's, you look at sort of how this is shaping up, and I set out to do a big board, and it's tough because you make arguments for the guys at the top and you feel pretty confident about who they're targeting at the top. But this one seems a lot, this seems pretty open in terms of what's out there. You look at the offensive linemen like Malachi Goodman and Michael Carroll, Zaire Addison as well. Like you're like, okay, well, I could see Penn State landing a couple of these guys, or I could see Penn State missing on these guys. You know, it's like we're kind of in that little range right there. So I think most wanted is the way to go. Sort of lay it all out there, put out there what the visits are, who the actual contenders are. We've got guys that are setting up 5 visits and then putting out top 10. So you got to wade through all that stuff and sort of see what's in there. So yeah, I do recommend checking it out. A lot of information in that piece, and hopefully in the second piece as well.
Ryan, you don't have to go off of Fitz's list, but if you had a most wanted on offense, who's a guy that stands out to you as Penn State is, this is a guy who's a linchpin of what is going to happen in 2025?
It's got to be receiver or offensive tackle, right? I think we would both agree with that, Sean. Unless you want to go back to Matt Zollers, which Penn State's going to keep chipping away at him. So, I mean, he's certainly a guy that it needs to be on that list and is on that list. Good putting him on there, Sean.
But, so much disrespect for tight ends, but anyway, go on.
It's because the room's deep, though. Anyway, I'm actually going to do a tight end story here soon myself, so we'll talk about that in the coming days. But I would probably have to lean Lex Cyrus just because of the speed dynamic and with him being from Harrisburg and with that being an area that they have so consistently done well with over the years. Like, you can't – if you look at the top of the – you look at Pennsylvania right now, right? I mean, they've already missed on Zollers. You have Zaire Mathis in there. Of course, Andrew Olish, he'll be in the mix. But, like, they've missed on a couple of those top guys already in the state. Well, Cyrus is going to be another one of those guys. What's he, maybe fifth or sixth in the state, Sean? Is he fourth? Somewhere in that ballpark. So you got to get some of these top five or so guys in the state. And I think after, again, missing on Zollers, you got Olish in there who's not going to be easy to get. I still feel like they have a good chance there. But, you know, those schools are coming on strong. You know, Cyrus is a guy who did go down to Miami, did go down to South Carolina. I think Oregon's kind of chipping away there a little bit. I think they offered him somewhat recently. But the consistency with the amount of visits to Penn State over so many other schools, you have to feel good. But didn't we say that about Trent Wilson too, and maybe Matt Zollers and a couple other guys as well? So yeah. It makes it so hard to read in the
NIL world. Cold water there. Yeah,
I know. Sorry.
No, I mean, you look at Lex Cyrus and you think track's going to be an option or at least a factor, and he's going out to Oregon, you know, they'll be involved, but I don't know that he's a college sprinter. Like, I think he's a guy that's transitioning into a football player, and you look at some of his times, they're really good. And he of course won the state meet last year, but like when you compare, I made the mistake of looking at the Penn Relay 100 times this year. Delaware State's got two guys that are running like 10 threes. So like college sprinting isn't incredibly different animal. And I'm curious to see if that's a factor or when that fades out. I think it'll fade out in his recruitment. I just don't know when.
Was there somebody on the list, Fitz, that or maybe that somebody that was on the list that got cut, or was there like an honorable mention in your mind in terms of somebody who is right on the fringe of most wanted but maybe doesn't fit all the criteria for what you put into the article?
Yeah, I think you look at that every time, and you look at the guys that are going to visit. We always talk about the top three offensive linemen, but you know, Phil Troutwine's got a deep board. Like, he's going to go out and check out some other guys. Max Buchanan's going to come in the last week of June. It's going to be a tough pull from Florida, but like, those are the guys that, you know, all of a sudden you turn around and it's late June and Penn State's right in the mix for one of those guys. So I think it'd be the surprise. I don't know if it's a fading type thing right now. You know, Lincoln Cure, the tight end from Kansas, they faded with that. It seems like Oregon is pushing Kansas State right now. But you know, you're still trying to get these guys back to campus, trying to move the chess pieces in a spot that works well. The offensive line class is very interesting to me because you've got these, you know, this sort of clear cut three guys, and then you've got some good regional targets, but also you've got Alessine, who looks like a natural tackle. You've got Michael Thomas,
Troutman,
Michael Troutman, who, you know, is a center slash guard, not a guard slash center, probably a center slash guard. So
did he grow a little bit?
Different body. Sorry, go ahead.
Did he grow a little bit? I was looking, and it looked like there was an update on him on the On3, his height, weight over his On3 profile. So I know that size and length were a thing with him. Do you feel any better about that now that, you know, we're a little bit farther on in his recruitment? Didn't know if that was a thing.
I think so. He's, like I said, he's kind of like Sal in that he'll be the short guy in the room, but, you know, he's not terribly short. Like, he's a legitimate 6'2", which, you know, 10 years ago, he would have been listed at 6'4", and he's not. You know, it's a situation where you've got a guy that's, you know, he's got, his size is not a strong suit, but he's a heck of a player, and he's probably going to play center. So when you see him out there, it's like Sal. When you see him out there among his peers that are, you know, Egan Boyer 6'8.5", and you know, all those guys are big football players, he's going to look small. But he's, you know, he's, you look at the draft this weekend, there were guys that were short that were drafted.
Yeah, for sure. I apologize if I derailed you. Were you going somewhere else with that before I brought that up?
I was going somewhere else, but it was nowhere fast. So yeah, I think we can go back to that.
The only other player I'd add to that is maybe Taz Williams, just because he seems like he's kind of a guy who's come on strong. Receiver's really still important. Do I think they're going to get Taz Williams? I don't really, but that recruitment just seems like one that Penn State was always interested in, and then he comes up, and it seems like their interest really has kind of grown there. But go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I think he's there. I think he's there. But you look at, as I said, national versus local in terms of receiver, and it's almost like the Florida guys that we talk about. Mm-hmm. Those guys have to be in a sweet spot. I mean, if your guy is coming from California and USC wants him, probably not going to get him. And that's not an indictment of Penn State. That's kind of how just this whole logic game works. Mm-hmm. So guys from Florida, Samari Reed is a guy that I think is in that sweet spot where, you know, he's probably not at the top of Florida State, Florida's board, but he makes sense for Penn State. So I think that's what you have to find nationally. And you've got to make a determination that those guys are going to be as good as the guys that you have in, not in house, but in region. Like it's very fascinating to me, like how we sort of, the further away you get from, you know, central Pennsylvania, the better these things appear. And it's not always the case. Like Andrew Marsh is a really talented player, and he's got official visits to USC, Texas, Oklahoma, which is probably more indicative of his talent than, you know, some of the other guys. But like, you need to make sure, that guy is that guy that you think he is. And it's very curious because we've seen, remember John Dunmore a couple of years ago, like we thought he was a guy, came up, didn't play here, didn't play at Oregon State. Like it doesn't always work that way. So, you know, further is not always better. You know, you look at some of the better Penn State receivers over the last 10 years, a lot of them have been from this area.
You know, this is going to be patented T. Frank curveball here, but just something that you guys have talked about with these recruitments of, do I think they're going to get X? No, I don't think so, but they're in on the recruitment. And I think some fans, the frustration is USC comes in, gets Elijah Newby, which is a surprise. And Penn State, I'm not saying they get no surprises out of the region. But what is there a position where they can pull nationally and get a guy and have that level of influence that other top 25 schools have around them, or top 10, 15, however you want to segment it? And then, I guess, what does it take for them to get over the hump with one of these players that they're targeting where you feel good they're in the recruitment, but they don't have the juice to get it over the line? Ryan, do you have any running thoughts back on that? Running back?
Catron, Alvin Henderson. I think those are two decent examples there.
Tight end.
Yeah, tight end. But, I mean, most of their tight ends have all been regional recently. I was going to say that. But, you know, Rapoyer, Reynolds, obviously Schaffler, everybody else. But I don't know, linebacker maybe, but I mean, for the most part, their linebackers are pretty regional right now. I believe
the position that lend themselves to Northeast and Big Ten football. That's what you're saying. Although corner, you know, got John Mitchell, got Antoine Belgrave Shorter. I would argue on the higher end of that sweet spot from Florida, but still really, really good. Projected
Elliot Washington.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. It's good you bring up the cornerback position. It's not receiver, but hey, corner is really important to defense. Like if there's a comparative position on the defensive side that, you know, edge, corner, those two are super important and one of the reasons they've been so consistent. Yeah, it literally is a mirror position of receiver on the football field. So that is something that they do have in their cap to boast about.
And I think that's why edge recruiting is a little bit surprising. Like they don't have the national clout. Although if you look at the position as a whole, it's fairly regional. Like there are guys that go elsewhere, especially from north to south usually, but it's fairly regional because those guys are so important. But if you look at Penn State's three deep now, you've got Zariah Fisher. I'm just going, this is not in order, but Zariah Fisher's from Pennsylvania. Smith Vilbert is from New Jersey. Amin Vanover is from New Jersey. Denai is from Delaware, but went to school in Maryland. Jameel Lyons is from Philly. Like you've got guys in this base that you've not only recruited well at the top with Denai, but also you found guys like Jameel Lyons might be a real dude. Abdul Carter, I don't know how I left him off, is from Philly as well. Like you found guys that were maybe not as highly rated as Denai, but you know, could end up being higher draft picks than him because of the traits that you look for. So I've just found that to be a fascinating development over the last couple of years, because John Scott was not the recruiter. Deion was the recruiter. And now you've kind of found yourself in this 2025 class where it's very thin in the region, that you're going to have to go out and find another guy like that. It's it'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because you have faith that they'll do it. It's just a matter of how they get there.
Another article that I thought was super interesting, Ryan, I love when you do these recaps, because we talk about this show, we project, we look forward, we say what's next, and that's generally how people want to go, kind of stumbling forward through time. But it's really helpful to look back and say, okay, what did we actually learn? And you do this, I think, monthly now. So what do we learn about Penn State in April?
Depends on how busy the month is.
Right.
It's a little easier to do that April 30th than, you know, maybe December in that area.
You do it quite a bit, I'll say that.
Yeah, I try and get them in. I should do them more, honestly. It's just sometimes we're so busy right around the change of a month. It's like, I just don't have time to squeeze in at the moment. But look, I mean, we separate it as like a good and a bad in this article, right? So everybody knows about Zollers. I had to mention that in the article. Everybody knows about Alvin Henderson. You know, that's kind of the good and the bad of the month. If you follow Penn State recruiting, I think you understood, you know, those two situations. I thought one of the biggest takeaways really for April was kind of how the new 2025 prospects have been emerging. You know, a Brody Lennon, for example, Ohio tight end prospect. A Tommy Rupley, for example, out of New England, I forget which is it, Massachusetts or Connecticut, I forget which one, but you know, quality players like that who have come up and visited. And you know, Penn State really liked what they saw on film, but they didn't really know the player yet. They come up, they visit, wow, everything really kind of clicks. You obviously get their measurements and everything like that, all that checks out. So just that, I thought that was maybe one of the biggest things we took away. I mean, there's so many others too, like a Jaden Lofton and Nolan Davenport, guys who visited twice in 2 weeks. Like that's I knew Jaden Lofton was always kind of interested, but really seeing his interest with those consistent visits. And then, you know, you got those guys down in Florida, right? You know, Grayson Littleton, Rashad Johnson, Grayson Littleton's a corner, Rashad Johnson's a safety, Randy Adarica, I believe it is, defensive lineman out of Miami Central. So just kind of seeing how much that board has progressed over the last month or so. And we see that at other points in the cycle, but really – with everybody scheduling all these official visits, and then also with spring practice and spring games going on, you're seeing more turnover, I guess you'd say, as far as the 2025 board, what the official visit list is going to look like, things like that. So I thought that was maybe the biggest takeaway, really kind of seeing the next step of their board. And then I also had to throw Dia Bell in there too, 2026 quarterback, who we've talked about a good bit, yeah. I feel like, on the show and over the last couple months. Him getting back was really important. And look, I mean, he's a second-ranked quarterback in the country right now. Another guy that will not be an easy recruitment for them to win. But I feel like they're legit top three, top four right now, and are absolutely in the mix with, you know, a quarterback who, you know, could eventually end up being the number one guy in the class. We'll see.
So if you want to go and read the rest of his article, I didn't have this earlier, and I apologize, because I didn't give you the easy layup here like I thought it was, Ryan. Code PSU1. Subscribe because you're listening to the podcast, because you're listening to the YouTube channel. You already support Blue White Illustrated. If you haven't taken the dive yet, 2 months for $1. Special offer here just for our YouTube channel and podcast audience at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Use the promo code PSU1 and you get that sweet deal. Okay, so this is really fun. And again, this is going to be you guys talking about Penn State's players that were just drafted last weekend. By the time this rolls out, it'll be a week away from the first round of the NFL draft, but we're going to take a look back in the time machine of what they were as Penn State recruits and where they ended up as NFL players. So let's start at the top of the draft. Everyone's favorite offensive lineman from the Nittany Lions in recent memory, Olu Fashanu. Who wants to lead us off with the story that Olu had coming to Penn State?
Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, we can do that. Came out of Gonzaga. He's always been an awesome kid. Like it's never been an issue for him. He was low maintenance, as you would expect. This was a guy that Penn State was exceedingly high on as a recruit. I don't know how many times I texted Brian Doan say this kid should be a 4-star, and that's one of those ones that I didn't win. But it feels like forever ago, because it was in that 2020 cycle. Coming out, it seemed like Penn State was setting up to sign a couple of good ones from that area. Because one of the fun things about this sort of segment is we're going to play some Remember That Guy. Aaron Parks was also in that class from National Christian Academy at that point. He went to Oklahoma yes. and then A&M. And then, yeah, he's been all over the place. So not really surprised. That's National Christian has or at that time has had a lot of guys that have sort of flamed out there. But he was there. Anton Harrison was there. I would think it's safe to say that Olu was the lowest maintenance of all those guys. Anton Harrison came to camp one time and it was the big man challenge and he decided to play tight end for the 7-on-7 team instead of working out with Matt Limegrover. So that was fun. Did not expect him to turn into a first round pick as well. But that is kind of how that worked out. More credit to him. He's certainly turned into a heck of a player at Oklahoma, but those were the guys that they really circled in on. And that is sort of a crazy year for talent in that region at that position. But Olu was low maintenance as they come, wanted to do the combination of the academics and the athletics, and he found Penn State. Interesting that I believe it was the next cycle or was it two cycles later, Ryan, that Evan Link came along from Gonzaga and mm-hmm. you thought Penn State was going to be there because of how Olu made that transition and he ended up going to Michigan. Don't really think he's done anything yet, but he was one of my favorite prospects in that particular cycle. But Olu was and always has been a unicorn. Like, that's a guy that came out, really made the most of his experience, really worked his way in that player. He was a project. Like, he was a project. He was not a guy that you drop and put in there and he was ready to go right away. Had to sit behind Rasheed Walker. Rasheed Walker obviously opts out of the Outback Bowl a couple of years ago. Olu drops in and it's all history from there, man. Guy worked his way into a position. Heck of a development job, heck of a recruitment job, heck of an all-around job on both ends by Penn State. You could not ask for much more from that recruitment.
I think he is an interesting story that illustrates that it's not just the player talent and it's not just the coach. You have to have that third element, as you mentioned, Fitz, of being low maintenance and having that intrinsic ability to be motivated to get better at all times and to do all of those things. So, you know, when we talk about offensive linemen and hit rate and all those things, like, there are, outside of the physical tangible things, there are aspects that we can't really account for at any level of recruiting or assessment, whether it's the NFL draft or if it's at the high school level. Ryan, do you have any thoughts on Olu or do you want to move on to our next player?
Well, since we're talking about old employers, I will say Rivals did have
Rivals
a four-star show.
Yeah, you did. He was so quiet. You didn't see any movement whatsoever. Like, mm-hmm. he was one of those guys. You got one of those original ratings and then really never moved off of it. Right.
He didn't do May camps. I remember that sure. The one thing, I mean, as Sean already said, it was always felt like Penn State was always in a very good spot. I mean, I remember him, he visited, I think he only visited three or four times. It was basically between December 2018 to June 2019. I know he committed, I think he visited maybe like June 1st, June 2nd, and then like committed like a day or two later. So it was, Penn State was always in a good spot there. And if I've gotten to know his parents over the years, I mean, it always made a lot of sense that Penn State would be the school. So within the region, they care about academics, they care about character, all the things that Penn State fans know, how James Franklin runs his program and how the program's always really been ran. It made perfect sense for Olu. So that was, man, that was one that Penn State really got right because he's going to be a heck of a player.
Could not do any better. Like, mm-hmm. absolute unicorn, great kid, great family, great fit.
Played with Caleb Williams, by the way. We didn't mention that.
You see, yeah. Him? Yeah, yeah. Play, and now playing with Aaron Rodgers, like, pretty good. Pretty good.
Maybe for like a quarter.
Depends how well he can block on the blind side, I guess.
Right.
One guy that.
Oh, true. Actually, yeah. Well, hopefully he does last long. I didn't add that up. That's funny.
Let's move on to the next player. We're going to go in order of draft position and mm-hmm. a player that Penn State, I think, got right, but didn't get right away. Chop Robinson. Ryan, what do you remember about Chop Robinson and his time as a Penn State recruit?
Well, this was a COVID recruitment, and I think that's important to stress right off the bat because this was one of those ones where I remember him coming to campus. I think it was twice in, I think his last visit, I want to say, was about, was like January, it was like a week or two before the January, before the February dead period started, right? So it was one of the last visits he took. I think he also went to maybe like Maryland and Tennessee was another one. There was a couple scattered in there. So Penn State got him on campus kind of late, but he never really, after that, like it just felt like it just went kind of quiet there. Maryland ends up being the school. Great. You know, kind of remember the details of that. But what the one thing I will say about him is I was able to do an interview with Chop for a magazine. I think it was maybe after a year he was here, and he never really opened up about the portal, why he entered, who, what other schools are in there. And because I do recruiting, like I, that was a big focus of my interview. So I learned, you know, USC was the other school that was in the mix that he seriously considered out of the portal. I didn't think, at least at the time, that wasn't really reported on much. And he flat out admitted that he left there because he didn't like the way Loxley was using him positionally at the time. So those were just kind of little details that I remember for that. But, you know, it was always kind of a situation where I feel like if that wasn't a COVID year and everything that went involved with that, maybe Penn State would have had a better shot. But, you know, at the end of the day, they circled back and got the guy and look what they did with him.
Fitz, what do you remember from his time as a recruit?
Yeah, Mike Loxley finds a couple guys each cycle, especially in that DMV area, that he says, hey, play the hometown hero. You know, it'll work out for you the best way it does. Hasn't always done that. I mean, Stephon Diggs was one of those guys, and he ended up a fifth-round pick. So, like, the talent that Maryland has put out there hasn't always been that guy. Like, they've gotten really good prospects, and it hasn't really worked out every time. I would say there was a bit of spite involved with that when he came to Penn State. Like, Ryan, you did that interview for the magazine. I remember talking to him after the Rose Bowl, and he's like, man, I am in such a better place right now than anywhere. He wouldn't mention Maryland by name, but, like, he felt pretty happy with the development that he got at Penn State. So, yeah, this was a good one. This is a guy that came to camp in 2019 in a whiteout camp. Curtis Jacobs was there. Tyler Elsden was there. So he was the younger guy going through the steps as a linebacker. I thought he could play linebacker. I actually thought, like, when he was coming out, and he was a five-star he was a five-star with us when I was 24/7. This is a guy that was just he was like Micah in that he could play hand in the dirt. He could play, as a regular linebacker at 2-point stance. He could do whatever because he was so athletic. So he was just on another level at that point. And of course, Penn State recruited linebacker really well. And he was right there with Curtis Jacobs, who was, I believe a five-star in that class before him as well. So he turned into a guy that once he decided that he was going to put his hand in the dirt, go after quarterbacks, he was going to do that really well. And he, to his credit, really did that.
I remember watching his film at Maryland when he committed to Penn State, in the transfer portal, and going, what are they doing? Because every third down, he got a chance to rush the passer, and it was like, oh, this is the player. You look at the recruiting ranking, and as you mentioned, the 247 and the On3, and everybody had him as a top 200 player, if not a top 50 player. And then I went back and I watched his high school film and just the get off and everything we talked about him in the draft and his ability, that burst, that athleticism. He was a five-star player in talent and tools, and to see, kind of his ascent at Penn State, knowing that if he had stayed another year, how much more dominant he would have been, like he went as a third year player. And he's going to do all the more developing because he spent a year playing Sam linebacker as a hybrid in Maryland. A lot of that development he's going to do in the NFL, I've been
You're just
very
salty because he went to the Dolphins, aren't you?
I am super annoyed.
Really, yes, wish he stayed another year.
Yes, yes, yeah. That's just like fans who want them to stay, so that Penn State wins. I wanted him to stay so that I got to watch him more often because he's so much fun to watch, and so that he didn't go to the Dolphins. You want to move on to the next pick? Let's go on to the next player. That would be Caden Wallace. Who wants to take Caden? Because this one, very interesting, following his career at Penn State, but it started in a good place, Fitz.
Yeah, I mean, this was a guy that was at the top of the board from the jump in the class of 2019. I believe he was ranked as a guard because everyone has always projected him as a guard, and he eventually ended up playing tackle really well last year. I don't remember a ton of drama with that one. He came to a bunch of visits early, and Penn State was able to lock him down. I know Oklahoma and Stanford were in the mix as well. But this was one of those ones that was, it made a ton of sense from both sides of it. And, they locked him up early May. Now it seems, that they locked him up early. That was May of 2018. So we're like right now in that cycle, in the 2025 cycle. So yeah, not much drama with this one. Penn State was always the leader. And, that was pretty much how it played out. Again, can't say enough about the turnaround that he made in his last year. Like he was, a bubble draft guy going into last spring, and now all of a sudden he's a third round pick. So can't say enough about the development there and the mindset to get where he needed to get. It was a big one.
Ryan, guard, tackle.
Yeah, you know, like I don't have a lot to add. It was another, not like Olu, it was similar to Olu. It was pretty cut and dry. I felt like Penn State was always the favorite.
They do well with those guys.
Yeah, he came up and visited. I mean, I remember interviewing him. He came up and visited in March for spring practice, and he didn't commit till May. And I remember interviewing him. He was like, yeah, I don't know why I didn't commit in March. Like, I knew then it was done. And he dragged it out for another, I don't know, maybe took some more visits in April. I don't remember exactly, but I do remember him just being like, I don't know why I didn't do this 2 months ago. I was like, oh, respect. I get it.
This is an interesting situation that it's never one-to-one, right? Because again, class of 2019, he's going in 2024 draft. It's not like it's the 2019 class was drafted over the past weekend, but 60th overall player here in the On3 industry rankings, and that's what I'm putting in our graphics, is that's the overall spot. That's what it says here. He's an offensive tackle here. He was a guard other places, but generally here in the composite ranking, 60th overall, he goes 68th. So, you know, pretty even. I think that's kind of chalk, and you know, he proved by the end of his career at Penn State, whether it was up or down, by the end he was a very good offensive tackle and was doing things that they needed him to do as a bookend to you know, top 10 pick in the NFL draft.
I do have a correction here. He was okay. A Blue White game commit. He was committed the morning of the Blue White game. So when we were out tailgating, I remember Steve put up the story for us. So it was April, and it was the first time that players were allowed to take official visits in the spring. So March, I believe it was March to March and April at that point, because he officially visited Oklahoma the week before, turned around, came back, committed to Penn State April of 2018.
That's my fault then. I put May in there. Sorry.
I'm starting to see, but Ryan, I'm starting to see like the amount of rule changes that have happened over the last 5 years of official visits in the spring, official visits in the summer, early commitments. It probably seemed like an early commitment because all the things, the way the calendar has changed and the way that recruiting has changed in the last 5 years seems crazy.
You know what makes that mistake even more funny is if you read the April story that I did the other day, I talk about the blue white visitor list and I read off the fact that they had Zach McPherson, CJ Thorpe, Robert Martin, Nana Asiato, Caden Wallace, Cobra Vard, Jameel Lyons, and Caleb Brewer as a, like, what was it, 7 year streak. And then I don't know, 24 hours later, I wrote May.
It seems like we haven't had, those official visits, like forever, but like,
oh, I'm talking about commitments. I'm sorry. I'm talking about commitments on Blue White weekend.
Right. But
okay.
Oski was the first ever spring official visitor for Penn State. It was like in March or something. They were just figuring this stuff out and he went in last year's draft. So like, that's how long we're here. Like, it's just,
have they had more than five guys take official visits in April total? I mean, they haven't done it in years.
So
it was small numbers.
Early they did, because Tyler Rudolph and Marquise took them. Marquise Wilson took them, and it was a couple other ones that did. And then they decided, well, this is not great, because you go to those official visits in the spring, and I know Virginia Tech just did this a couple of weeks ago, but you take those official visits, and then what have you got on the back end? You've got to play defense for the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that makes a ton of sense.
Right.
Let's move on to our next player selected 107th overall. That would be tight end Theo Johnson. This is another COVID recruit, right, Ryan?
Was Theo COVID? I can't remember. He was
class of 2010 or 2020. Jeez, 2020.
No, so he's not. So he's okay. Not. 2021, 2022, you know, because again, we always, they get recruited. And then on the back end, we still use 2022 right, because we think it's a February signing period when really it's not anymore. But no, so he wasn't. The thing I remember about Theo was really just kind of that his recruitment lasted longer than we thought it would. Do you remember that, Sean? I mean, there was a lot. I felt like there was a good 4, 5, 6 month period there where we thought Penn State was the favorite. And then I remember interviewing him after, and he admitted, like, yeah, Penn State was the favorite for multiple points. But I felt like maybe towards the end of his season and kind of getting closer to his commitment, which I think was December 2019. So it was maybe, I don't know, a week before signing day at the time. It was right around that range, I think. You know, he admitted that, you know, Georgia was in the mix, Iowa was in the mix. I think Michigan. was the other school there too. So just one of those ones that dragged out longer than I thought it would. And I remember also interviewing him talking about how the Lash Bash played a massive role in him eventually picking Penn State, because of he went on to other visits with other schools, obviously, and multiple recruits at those visits, but just the way that Penn State interacted with everybody during that Lash Bash visit was something that really just kind of stuck with him, as far as, you know, it wasn't just hanging out with Theo and his mom, but, you know, younger family members or whatever it may be. And that's kind of what the Lash Bash is all about, really kind of connecting with everybody and showing that family atmosphere they try to talk about a lot.
What do you remember, Fitz?
He camped in, I believe, 2018 with Brenton Strange. So the two of those guys, two NFL draft pick tight ends, out running drills, out testing and doing everything. They just obviously were massive guys, like absolutely huge. But Theo was not on the radar at all at that point. Brenton Strange was a little bit. Actually, I think Brenton earned an offer from that camp as well. So pretty good scouting. I think Tyler Bone was the tight ends coach at that point. Pretty good scouting. Not that it takes much to look at those two monsters and say, yeah, hey, I don't want these guys. But no, it was a really cool camp to attend, because he basically came out of nowhere, out of Canada. His brother was there. His brother played at Buffalo, brought him to camp to get him out there. And he really blew up. And you look at the schools that he considered at the end. Georgia just had Brock Bowers go very early. Iowa has a lineage of tight ends that's up there with anybody in the country. And then Michigan just puts a couple of tight ends out every year. So he did his due diligence and he did his homework to see which ones would produce the best tight ends. We can argue about whether he was used properly at Penn State, but that's not this show. So we're going to move on.
Yeah. I was going to say something about that, but
I know, right. You were. I saw it on your forehead. You were, you did not hide that one well.
So come back to you though about the next player drafted. That'd be Adisa Isaac. Isaac was at one point the next in line as the great Penn State pass rushers. We all know what happened in his history and his time with the Nittany Lions, his injuries. But Fitz, what do you remember about him as a recruit and a player before all of that happened?
Yeah, got him on campus early and developed that relationship. That was a Sean Spencer guy. And I know Sean's guys haven't completely panned out, but like he was one of those guys that was in that sort of sweet spot for Sean, in that it was Connecticut, New York. He was very good in that area. Again, not all those guys panned out. Adisa was one of those guys that he looked at. And this is the guy that I point to when Malachi Williams comes in at 215 or 217 pounds and say, don't worry about that. It's not about the weight. Adisa was 210 pounds. Like, he was a rail. He was a big kid, long arms, all those kind of the features that they look for, but he just didn't have the weight. He came to camp as a going into his senior year, which kind of seems archaic at this point, but he was there. Miami was a big presence in this recruitment. I have to shout out Charles Power, who was adamant that this guy was a top 100 player. Like, I know he went around with some of the guys at 24/7 that did not think that he was all that great. It seems like Charles was pretty close on this one. So, and you can't say enough about Adisa in terms of the work that he put in to get back from that Achilles injury. That's a career killer for a lot of guys. Yeah. And he did not let that happen. Rounded out and played extremely well in 2023. A lot of guys on that defense did, but Adisa was, he was always one of the favorites, because he did it the right way.
A guy that I didn't talk about enough, I have not highlighted enough how good he was as a football player his senior year, because, you know, some, I think, you know, just looking the direct comparison and then googling over the way Chop wins and the NFL potential and translation of those skills, but Adisa being the more well-rounded player and still being a very good athlete, and again pointing out where, given Charles his credit, 66 overall is a third round pick. He goes 93rd at the end. So if you say he's within the round of where he thought Adisa Isaac would go as the 66 overall player versus where he went 93. Ryan, what do you remember of Adisa? What do you remember his recruiting?
Well, I just want to make sure I'm remembering this correctly, though. Adisa went before Theo, right? I know I said I had a blurry weekend and everything, but
put it in the wrong way.
He went late Friday night, I thought. Okay.
Just making sure. They go up wrong. They go by name, and I just got them wrong on the
good.
Over here.
Okay. Again, like I said, it was a fun weekend. I'm just making sure I did not get that one wrong.
Let them hear about it in the comments while you're liking and subscribing. So,
I remember a couple of things. One, you know, his family story is well documented by now about his siblings and some of the things that, you know, he's had to deal with. His whole family's had to deal with growing up. I thought that always was going to play a big factor in Penn State getting that over the line, not going too far from home. And I think it did. Now, Miami came on strong, and I remember Deese's recruitment. I felt like it dragged out longer than most. Now, at the same time, I'm probably comparing it to the last couple of years where we don't see those official visits deep in the year anymore. But I do remember him taking an official visit to Penn State, I believe October of what would have been 2018, and then Miami was maybe like a month later. And I remember thinking there's like no way he's going to take this official visit and not commit, and sure enough, he didn't. And then he goes into Miami. And it kind of, Adisa wasn't one to really open up. He'd do interviews, but not really, you know, admit kind of even on or off the record who was really standing out. So that Miami late official and then kind of leading into the signing period, I just remember that giving some suspense to a recruitment that we thought should have been over kind of well before it did. But Penn State got him, and that's all that really matters in the end. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I think he went to a heck of a place in Baltimore. Like I think that's a great fit.
Yeah. Baltimore, San Francisco, man. Like that would be awesome for a defensive lineman at the end of a round. The other thing here, Theo and Adisa sort of proving that you can take multiple visits to Penn State and drag out your recruitment and still end up at Penn State. I know a lot of people just want to say, okay, well, why haven't they committed yet? These are kind of proof. And when the proof is at the top of your roster, that's a good thing.
Yeah, especially if they go in the fourth round, who would be the next player, although we've already done Theo Johnson. Now we're swinging down into the fifth round. I'll be interested to see how you guys want to handle this one, Hunter Norzad. You know, according to On3, no rankings for him, going all the way back to the class of 2018, drafted 159th overall. Guys, where do you want to pick up the story with Hunter Norzad?
I couldn't tell you a thing about his high school. I'm sure I wrote stories on it. I don't remember a lot, though. I mean, what I remember was his top five was Penn State, Auburn, Illinois, Iowa, Virginia Tech, I believe. And it really came down to the Big Ten schools. I remember talking to him about that. Came out, so Iowa, Illinois, Penn State really is kind of where it came down to. But I thought, was there an academic reason that he chose Penn State, Sean? Coming off of the Cornell.
He went to Cornell, so I mean...
I thought there was maybe – was he engineering or something, though? I thought there was maybe something there that kind of really helped Penn State, but
– I know Sean Cascarano was there. Like, I know that they had a lot more information because Sean is the O-line coach at Cornell, and he was a graduate assistant at Penn State, so knew the guys at Penn State pretty well. So that's not something that, like, pointed him to Penn State, but it was a – it was a nice little luxury to have for Penn State.
Also, a big, you know, as you guys have just been mentioning, a big win in the transfer portal. I remember it was a big deal when all of those offensive line schools going after a player and looking at, I forget what player was that just went in the NFL draft. It might have been James Daniel at the time. Goes in the first round, and Iowa wants Hunter Norzad. I'm like, well, there's the obvious fit. There's a guy that they think can be that for them. He chooses Penn State, eventually is a center for the Nittany Lions, and then is drafted. So just another one of those in-the-margins wins for Phil Troutwine.
That was a better win, like, because Iowa was there, but Illinois was there too. And
that's a great point.
Nobody's going to give them credit for beating Illinois, but Brett Bielema knows how to coach offensive linemen, and he knows how to put them into the pros, which is what Hunter came to, you know, his next stop looking for.
Yeah, two other things I remember too. Troutwine did two in-home visits with his family down in Georgia, and I remember Norzad was just remember him talking about how like those were definitely the best in-home visits that kind of helped him get over the line. And then also when he did his official visit to Penn State, he was paired up with Juice Scruggs and Sean Clifford, who I think are two guys that really kind of helped get that over the line. Cause he, I remember him raving about Juice. Like that was one thing that he honestly talked almost too much about. I was like, okay, next question. I just remember raving about Juice Scruggs.
Another NFL center. Here's a guy that there's gotta be some great stories here. Sixth round pick, Daquan Hardy. What do you guys, Fitz, what do you remember about Daquan Hardy's recruitment in 2019?
He was always really good at football, but also tiny. just absolutely tiny. This was not a situation where you found, like, I mean, everybody knew about Daquan Hardy in Pennsylvania because of the numbers that he put up, but like, you didn't think of him as a prospect. Like, and that's not a slight on him. That's looking at what he did in his recruitment. He went to Akron, Kent State, and Toledo for official visits, and Penn State. Penn State offered him the day before signing day. We were just, and I'm going to name drop here because he was at Ryan's tailgate. We were just tailgating with Ross Tucker, who covered that state championship game that James Franklin brings up every time you mention Daquan Hardy. And Penn State, I don't want to say was passing, but they brought him in for an official visit. He wasn't, or I guess that was a month later. But Penn State was kind of like, can we take this guy? And I know that doesn't make a ton of sense now looking looking at his career. Can we take this guy? He's 5'9 kid, 3-star maybe. Like, I think we had
two-star rivals.
3-star rivals had him as a 2-star. Good job, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Just because he was a phenomenal player. But there's things that come along with it. Like, he's an in-state kid, so it's not like you can take him and burn him. Like, you can offer him at the start of his career, great. And if it goes nowhere, whatever. You take him and burn him that quickly, that's a problem. Now Terry Smith is a Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh guy. There's all those things that have come into it. So anyway, we're talking to Ross, and Ross watches the state title game, and he calls up, I think, Andy Frank, who was his teammate at Princeton, who's sort of runs the recruiting office, says, you sure about that? You sure about that? As he brings him in for an official visit. I mean, he's 5'9", maybe, tiny guy. But couple weeks later, they offered him. He committed on the spot, and yeah, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I like putting these up here just because I want to give these players credit. Where Daquan Hardy, the 1,309th player in his class, and he's a drafted player. So again, just remember how hard it is to be drafted. How small of a percentage it is, because this is the 2019 class. There's also the 21, 22, all those classes combined stacking on each other, and he was a drafted player. Ryan, any other thoughts you want to add here?
Just how awesome that state championship game was, man. 340 all-purpose yards, an 84-yard kick return, and 100-yard interception return. And by the way, like, they just barely ended up beating Mannheim Central 36-31. So those plays were absolutely massive. I remember watching it well and thinking, man, if this kid was only, what, 3-4 inches taller, he'd be a top 100 prospect. And then sure enough, yeah, everything kind of snowballed after that, and Penn State ends up getting him. But yeah, man, heck of a player. Happy for Daquan too. Really good guy. One of those guys that always had a chip on his shoulder, and man, he's out there proving it right now that he's always been kind of slept on. So great story. You know, James Franklin, I mean, Terry Smith, I felt like was always kind of high on Daquan, but he had maybe kind of get that over. Yeah. He's always high on his Pittsburgh guys, and I get it, but that was one of those ones where, you know, really kind of had to get everybody involved. And I felt like that state championship game obviously did it. Go ahead, Sean.
5'9", 158 at the time. So wow, that's a total projection. I mean, you can try and figure that stuff out, but that's a total projection. I know he's a teammate of Tank Smith, who is Terry's nephew. So there's a little bit more, maybe a little bit more information there. But Terry knows everybody in Pittsburgh, so that makes sense.
He's also one of the few guys who took an official visit who didn't have an offer at the time. I mean, like, if you obviously that happens later in cycles than any other point, and especially a handful of years ago compared to now, but
only a few that I remember. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I can't think of many.
Yeah.
Last but certainly not least, and certainly a guy that we've talked a lot, so much internet ink, especially on the Blue White Illustrated message board, has been for this guy, Kalen King, a 2021 prospect for Penn State, drafted 255th overall. Fitz, what do you remember about Kalen King from Cass Tech?
Top of the board corner for Terry in that class of 2021. Of course, that was the COVID class, but I believe they got on campus right before that, January of 2020. It's one of the last visits. The thing that got Kalen and Kobe is that they did not recruit them as twins. They did not recruit them as a package deal. They recruited Kalen was the big target, but then they offered Kobe separately, and it wasn't just like sort of it wasn't just words at that point. That helped Penn State a lot. They recruited them separately. They didn't say, you know, we'll take both of you or none of you. We will take one or the other. You know, that's kind of how that works. And I know Kobe has always been lumped in as the sweetener for the package deal, but that wasn't the case. That was the cycle with Jalen Reed. That was the cycle with Jamari Button. So Tim Banks, 3 of 4, you know, that was a pretty good run into Detroit. And they haven't really been a factor there since. So that was interesting. But Kobe was, I think, Ryan, you wrote this down. Kobe was leaning toward Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Kalen leaning toward Penn State. And then they both decided that Penn State would be the fit. Now you're going to get an extra, at least one extra year of Kobe, who has turned into a really good player.
Yep.
Like he's a heck of a linebacker. I know he's not the burst athlete that he had on the flanks there last year, but boy, he's going to have a really, he's going to end up probably top 10 in tackles in terms of Penn State history, or top 20 or something like that. I know the tackle numbers are a little bit different than they used to be when they got the better scorekeeping, or the more fortuitous scorekeeping a while ago. But that was a good one. And again, Kalen King's draft stock, a different conversation, but he was one of Penn State's top targets, and he was really one of their best gets in that class of 2021.
We talked about it on yesterday's BWI Live show, which you can go check out if you want to after this one. Ryan, what do you remember about Kalen King and his importance at the time to Penn State?
Absolutely. One of their top guys at the time. I mean, he ended up being one of the absolute top guys in the class. I would think that the one thing I remember about how it all went, obviously it's a COVID year, right? So this was, man, we're talking, 6, 7, 8 weeks into COVID right at the time. So as far as like following recruiting and how there's not going to be any more visits and all that was just very hectic at the time. What I do remember, though, this isn't necessarily about Kalen, but I remember the streak that Penn State won on. It was slightly after COVID started. Basically, I remember Landon Tangwall committed at the end of March, and they won on this run of Jalen Reed, Kobe King, and Kalen, of course, and Zaki Wheatley. Remember Zaki Wheatley? Because Jalen, Kalen commit, and then Zaki Wheatley's like, oh, I don't want to get left out. So he commits then. I think Zaki, Kobe, and Kalen all commit on the same day. I remember that being like, I don't know, first, second week of April. And then they go on this other run of like Jeffrey Davis, Christian Veyer, and I think like they got one other person. I want to say maybe like Rodney McGraw at the end of April, something like that. But ended up being a heck of a run considering – you know, the everything that was going on at the time, and you know, exactly. Like how was this all going to play out? And yeah, I think a lot of guys were already, obviously these guys were leaning towards Penn State, and nobody knew how this was all going to shake out. But I just remember being, I don't know, 6, 7 weeks into COVID, and it ended up being a really hectic April, which I didn't really expect at the time.
And a super talented group of players there, guys who mm-hmm. have or will factor in for the Nittany Lions. So that's what we got for today's show. Thank you guys so much for all of the insight, all the remember those guys. Fitz, any last thoughts about what's coming up from you at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com or something you want to mention here?
Not really. Just looking at the 2021 commit list right now, it's hit, it's miss, and it's still some meat left on that bone. So excited to talk about that one at some point, because that COVID class was so different, so special, and that was seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, and they did some rectifying on the back end through the transfer portal, because Chop Robinson part of that as well, that we talked about on today's show. So guys, Ryan, anything last thing for you want me to get out of here?
We're good. I mean, just chipping away at that OV list, man. Like I said, there's been quite a few additions over the last couple of days. We'll keep chipping away at that, and yeah, we got, 29 more days, 30 days until official visits start. So we'll get there.
And I'm going to a wedding that first weekend, so that'll be fun to see how that's all going to happen and shake out. But we'll get there when we get there. I'm Thomas Frank Carr, Ryan Snyder, Sean Fitz. They are the stars of today's show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, all that great stuff. We appreciate you. But more than anything, join us at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com so that you get all that sweet, juicy intel from these guys as we get closer and closer to official visit season. We'll talk to you later.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.